Donald Trump stunned the country and won the presidential election.
We must reclaim our country's destiny and dream big and bold and daring. We have to do that.
I'm Reed Frazier. This week on the Allegheny Front, we begin to look ahead at what this election means for the environment.
And I'm Carol Holsapple. What impact will Trump's victory have on the fate of the world's biggest climate treaty?
There's shock and just trepidation, really, about what's going to happen to this global climate agreement and what role the U.S. will play.
That story and more coming up on the Allegheny Front. Stay with us.
Okay, tell the truth. You didn't see this one coming, did you?
And to be honest, neither did we. But we wanted to find out what this historic election means for things like climate change.
But before we get into predictions, let's start with a little reaction. First from Pittsburgh, where there were protests and vigils, just as there were in other U.S. cities. Ariel Woods is a PhD student at the University of Pittsburgh studying climate change.
The possibility of runaway climate change is real. And this is 4 years of really, really terrifying setback.
Of course, President-elect Trump has called climate change a hoax.
And he said he'll do away with some of the biggest climate initiatives from the Obama administration. More on that later. There are other reactions this week from coal country. Bob Wilson is a coal miner in Greene County and a Trump backer. Wilson thinks environmental regulations under Trump will be eased and that will make it easier on coal and other industries.
Which is good for firing steel mills and stuff. And once our country starts, like Trump says, starts to build stuff again, starts to replenish, we'll have steel mills again. We'll need that coal to fire coke ovens again. And with the EPA getting off of our backs, you'll be able to produce coal for a cheaper amount.
And then there's Blair Zimmerman. He's a former coal miner, and he's a Greene County commissioner. He's a Democrat and voted for Hillary Clinton. He says he understands why so many in his coal-dependent county voted for Trump.
Everybody that I talked to that were like that diehard Trump, that's all they were thinking about was coal and, not losing their job.
Zimmerman says in spite of a Trump win, he doesn't see the coal industry coming back to what it used to be.
So I'm hoping, during this process that we say, okay, coal's going okay here. They're selling their product, but, it's not always going to be in Greene County or West Virginia or Kentucky, and we need to help them make changes over time to bring other manufacturing and industry into their regions.
A lot of people have gut reactions to these issues. But what does the Trump presidency really mean for energy and the environment?
To find out, I talked with Stephen Lacey, editor-in-chief of Green Tech Media, which specializes in covering the renewable energy industry like wind and solar. I asked him for his initial reaction to the election results.
Well, a lot of people are trying to figure out what this means for climate policy here in the U.S. So under the Obama administration, we have seen a lot of moves to lower greenhouse gas emissions, support clean energy, and engage the international community on climate diplomacy. And now a lot of people fear that's out the window.
Okay, talk a little bit about that. What are some of the mechanics that you're looking at? What are some of the programs or policies or agreements that folks in your sphere are worried about?
There are a couple things that people are worried about. Number one, the Clean Power Plan. This is a regulation that the Obama administration put into place a couple years ago for new and existing power plants through the EPA. And they argued that the Clean Air Act allows the EPA to regulate carbon emissions, and therefore they applied that to power plants across the country. It's undergoing a legal challenge right now in D.C. District Court, and the Trump administration will likely wait to see how that plays out. But everyone that I've talked to believes that one of the first things the Trump administration wants to do when it comes into office is to tear that regulation down assuming that it gets upheld by courts. The next is the International Climate Agreement signed in Paris last year in December. And the Trump administration really doesn't need to do much here. It just basically doesn't have to live up to commitments because these are voluntary commitments. So essentially what the Trump administration will do is drag its feet and just not do what the Obama administration said it was going to do under its international commitments. So those are really the two big ones. And then the third is all the regulations that the Obama administration put into place, like fuel emission standards for cars, like efficiency standards for motors and lights and HVAC systems. So many people fear that the Trump administration will come in and start to dismantle these as well. And you really just have a whole host of things that the previous administration put together as part of a comprehensive executive climate plan that the Trump administration can just start to knock down one by one.
Where is the renewable energy industry, the clean tech industry right now? And are there signs that, you know, sort of the gains that have been made over the last few years could be kind of undone because of all this? Or are there other forces at work?
The cost curve for wind and solar photovoltaics have come down so quickly that the economics just are much better than many fossil fuel projects in states. At the same time, we regulate energy on a state level, and you still see the vast majority of states putting in place very favorable policies to support renewables. So we don't really see any major changes right away. There are market forces at play that are beyond the Trump administration and that probably won't change. The big question really revolves around federal agencies that regulate power and what the Trump administration does with the Clean Power Plan. And these are things that can help boost renewable energy further. And so without the support of the White House, we may see a slowdown in growth, but growth will continue for sure.
Okay, you recently did a podcast on the Energy Gang called Trump's Energy Delusion. So can you encapsulate what Trump's energy positions are and, you know, sort of why are they delusional? How do they square with reality?
Well, the big delusion is that he thinks climate change is a hoax. And we start there with that premise. Every major scientific body around the world says that climate change is happening, it's accelerating, and it's caused by humans. So we have the one single national leader in the entire world here in America who thinks that climate change is a hoax. Beyond that, he believes that he's going to bring back the struggling coal industry in a big way, and that somehow the struggles in the coal industry are a result of the Obama administration. In fact, you know, the job losses we've seen in coal have been underway for decades because of the reduced need for coal, because of the surge in natural gas and the competitiveness of natural gas with coal, and because of mechanization in the mining process. So there are a lot of promises that Trump is making around bringing back industries that are struggling. And he's made some pretty sweeping statements about climate change being a hoax. And so that's essentially what the delusion is. A lot of people are hopeful that he'll come in, he'll drop the campaign rhetoric, and he'll recognize that there's a major energy transition underway, and he'll be more supportive of a wide range of energy technologies, including renewables. So really, it's anybody's guess exactly what a Trump energy policy will look like, but we certainly know that it won't revolve around doing anything about climate change.
So there was really very little discussion during the election about energy and the environment, climate change, the Paris Accords. I believe there were no questions asked in the debates about any of this stuff. Hillary brought it up once in the first debate. Did the media and the general public fall down on this aspect of the presidential campaign?
Yeah, a lot of people were really upset that climate didn't get mentioned yet again in the debates this year. And you know, it's one of the stranger issues to talk about because it is so pressing, yet so hard for us to wrap our minds around because it is this long-term problem. And I think because there are all these other pressing political issues, it's very easy for the debate moderators to avoid addressing the question. But it's vital for the public because the two candidates in this race couldn't have been more different on these issues. Again, Donald Trump has said that he believes climate change is a hoax perpetrated by the Chinese to make American manufacturing less competitive. He has probably 20, 25 tweets calling climate change a hoax. And Hillary Clinton put together a comprehensive plan to build off of existing rules to lower carbon emissions and to deploy $500 million solar panels and to really build on what the Obama administration has done. Whether or not you agree with it, that's a different question. But it's very clear that these candidates are so different on these issues, and yet again, we failed in front of the public to talk about this issue.
That was Stephen Lacey at Green Tech Media. I'm Reed Frazier. You're listening to the Allegheny Front. Coming up, will we always have Paris? A climate agreement hangs in the balance. Stay tuned.
There are serious concerns about what President-elect Trump will do on issues like climate change. Chief among these is what happens with last year's Paris Climate Agreement. To help us answer this question, we turn to Susan Phillips of State Impact Pennsylvania. She's at this year's annual United Nations Climate Meeting, or COP22, in Marrakesh, Morocco. Susan, has President-elect Trump's win cast a shadow on what's happening there because he said he won't honor the Paris Agreement that the U.S. signed?
Absolutely, Kara. I think there's shock and just trepidation, really, about what's going to happen to this global climate agreement and what role the U.S. will play. Remember, this is the first UN climate talks where there is an actual agreement. 100 countries signed on to this. It was ratified before anyone expected it to be. So there was a lot of optimism here. Now, a lot of folks are sort of trying to put a positive spin on this, saying, look, you know, the business environment is going towards investment in renewables. If you look at the fact that coal is still a lot more expensive than natural gas, that has nothing to do with anything negotiated at a climate change conference. That's just the global situation with shale gas being so cheap. So they're hoping that despite Trump's, you know, reluctance to even say that human-caused climate change exists, they're still hopeful that they can push for a new energy future that has less fossil fuels and more renewables.
Can the U.S. back out of the Paris Agreement now?
Officially, Kara, it could take them 4 years, but there's nothing really in the agreement to hold them to their pledges anyway. So Donald Trump could just easily ignore whatever Obama pledged, and he could also appoint a Supreme Court justice who would overturn the Clean Power Plan.
Well, what does this all mean for further negotiations?
I mean, the question I had when I woke up this morning, of course, is here I am in Marrakesh covering these climate talks. Well, what do the folks who are negotiating for the U.S., what do they do? Right now, you know, they have their mandate from President Obama, but 90 days from now, they will have a very different mandate. And one of the things that they were trying to iron out at this COP, at this climate conference, is finances. How would developed nations support financially the less developed nations when it comes to preparing for the impacts of climate change as well as reducing carbon emissions. That could cost trillions of dollars. And of course, the U.S., you know, would be one of those contributors. So it's really unclear right now. And I think a lot of these least developed countries are very, very concerned about what happened in the election.
Susan Phillips is covering the climate talks in Marrakesh, Morocco, with a grant from the International Reporting Project. This is the Allegheny Front. I'm Carol Holsapple.
Now that the election results are in, we won't know for a while what a Trump administration will do on the environment.
But we wanted to find out where the environmental movement goes from here. First, we reached out to Majora Carter. She's a public radio host and urban revitalization strategist. She worked to create jobs and economic development in the South Bronx with a focus on sustainability and green spaces. She joined me from a studio in Vermont where she was traveling. And I asked her if she were an advisor to President-elect Trump, what would she tell him about encouraging and investing in more job creation and startups in American cities?
I would help him to kind of draw on his experience as a real estate developer that used other people's money to create the visions of his dreams. And I think he could apply that acumen to helping to restore low-status communities in ways that actually create health and well-being economically and otherwise for those communities. And I would also help him to understand that there needs to be some dedicated work in investing in minority and women-owned businesses as well to help do some of that work within low-status communities in America.
President-elect Trump has also pledged to do away with many environmental regulations, and all indications are that there will be changes coming at the Environmental Protection Agency too. How could these changes impact urban communities already being affected by climate change and environmental problems?
I can't really answer that right now, but what I hope is that instead of environmentalists just, you know, beating the environmental drum, what I do hope happens is that we see an opportunity, an economic opportunity in helping to make American cities and our communities more resilient with what we know is happening or as the climate changes, and using that as a lever to create jobs and develop infrastructure, which means Americans have to do that work.
How big a role does who the president is play in the work that you do and what you want to accomplish, and how much of it is state and local government or community groups?
Interestingly enough, I got my start in my career under the George W. Bush administration, where there was, I think, a particularly hostile approach to environmental work. And I got a lot of work done because we focused on building alliances and relationships with all sorts of sectors, from business and government, and of course the community as well. And when we took that kind of approach, we actually were able to get things done. So I think, as always, working on the local level is what's going to get stuff done. And that's regardless of who the president is. And yes, of course, we want to work to make sure that there are, whether there are policies and incentives, you know, coming down the pipe that actually secure the kind of development that we want to see happening, of course. But it's not going to stop progress. I really don't believe that it will.
You alluded to before, you mentioned before, you know, that there might be distaste for something with the word green in front of it by a lot of people in America right now. So yes. How can people who are working on different types of environmental issues or revitalization issues help bridge that gap?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is to focus on what other folks express the most interest in. I mean, you have to look at other, if you're going to try to convince somebody of something, you have to look at what the way they view the world and respond in that way, even if you're talking about your own stuff. And so since we know that right now it is the economy, it is economics that people are concerned about, I think the best thing in the world, and this is definitely not the first time I've said this, but the best thing in the world is for, you know, folks that are working in sustainability and environmental, for environmental fields, really to be talking about the economics of it and how it actually impacts real people, and talk about how we can create models and opportunities for regular folks to see common cause and their lives getting better as we work to improve the environment. And give them real specifics. Like, that's why I like to talk about, it would be so cool if there was a green infrastructure, you know, national agenda that created jobs along the way. You would be psyched about that. Everywhere. But no matter what, in red and blue states, they'll be like, really? Jobs coming here? Okay, what do I need to do to get them?
And what's your hope about what could and will happen over the next 4 years?
My hope is that we can find a way to work with our president, and our president actually decides that he is going to work as the president of all of us to unite us and give us something that we can all be very proud of. I still believe in the promise of America.
Majora Carter, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Majora Carter is an urban revitalization strategist from the South Bronx in New York and has been a MacArthur Fellow and award-winning radio host.
For more perspective on where the environmental movement goes from here, we're joined by Patty DeMarco. She's a Pittsburgh scientist and educator who's worked on environmental issues and policy for 30 years.
She's also an author and was the executive director of the Rachel Carson Homestead Association. She even has a regular segment on the Union Edge radio show. Patty, thanks for being here.
Glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Welcome, Patty.
So President-elect Trump has said that he will abandon the Clean Power Plan. And we've also learned that he's put someone who is skeptical of climate change in charge of the transition at the Environmental Protection Agency. So how does the environmental movement, which has fought so hard, move on from here?
You know, you need to be extremely organized and extremely diligent. The laws of nature are not negotiable. So I think we need to have a very much more aware environmental education among the general populace. One of my frustrations with this campaign has been that we lost the opportunity for a broad discourse on the issue of climate change.
Fear has been part of what has made this election cycle so contentious, I think. And and many of the people who voted for Donald Trump responded to his assertion that he would bring jobs back to America. And this is something that, you know, we have covered a lot on our show about people who work in the coal industry who felt left out. And so how do we get into a conversation with people who may have felt left out by what they may consider liberal values and the environmental values, and bring them into that conversation about jobs and the health of the environment?
Well, you know, if you're going to have an economy that's based on renewable and sustainable systems, you need to have something beyond fuel switching and technology. You need to have attention to the reinvestment in communities that are dependent on those extractive industries so that they can reshape how they do their work and how they live. And I think we have done a poor job in helping people visualize how a sustainable economy would actually work. You know, if you look at transitions, for example, moving from the horse and buggy days to the automotive days when you had mechanized cars, think about all of the infrastructure that had to change and the things that were done to expedite that. You had to pave the roads. You needed a whole fuel supply system. People blew up their barns on a regular basis trying to have kerosene dump over, and all kinds of things happened. We have not attended to the infrastructure supporting a renewable and sustainable energy system. And that would provide a tremendous amount of jobs.
So you've been working on environmental issues as an educator and in the movement for a long time. Do you find any solace in taking a long view of this election?
I do, actually. I think one of the things that will happen out of this election is a lot of people who sort of sat it out have suddenly realized, oh, I sat here and look what happened to us. I also think that both parties are going to have to examine much more carefully what is the voice of the actual people. Bernie Sanders raised that voice with, I mean, thousands and thousands of students who've never been involved in politics, were motivated and came out and felt engaged, and they were basically slapped aside, and they feel disillusioned and disowned. That energy is still there, and we need to listen to that. We need to find a way that if we're going to make a more environmentally and more socially just economy happen, you know, we need to rebuild an economy that is based on inclusive communities where the people who actually do the work matter too. And they didn't feel like they mattered.
Where do you go from here? Does this election change anything about how you approach your own work?
Oh, sure. I've called for the revolution already. I think we have to be prepared to stand in front of the shovels in our national refuges and on our federal lands. I think when, you know, like the Standing Rock Sioux have been doing on the pipeline, that should have to be legion across this country. I think a million-person march on Earth Day to the White House would not be amiss. I think a million people holding Save Our Earth signs at the inauguration would not be amiss. I think you have to be willing to call the elected officials into account for everything. I think this is a wake-up call to people that complacency is not the answer and that giving up is not fair to our children. And if you sit here and say, we can't do anything, we lost the election, we have to wait for 4 more years, you don't have 4 years. You have to start tomorrow, today, to plan for the 2-year election and build the leadership from the people who have the biggest stake in the future, which is the young people. Some of these old gray hairs need to get out of their chairs and make space for my students who are passionate and informed and care a lot. You need to make space for them. You need to recognize them. You need to look at the people who've been, you know, down to the bone working to keep their families fed and housed and clothed and respect their tradition of hard work and find a way to make them feel that they matter. These are people that you see every day, and you have to treat each other with respect. And I think that, to me, is the most important thing we need to do after this election is just be good to each other and respect and value each other.
Patty, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Patty.
You're welcome.
Patty DeMarco is an environmental educator and author of an upcoming book about sustainability in Pittsburgh.
So we're at the end of the show, and we don't really know what to expect from President-elect Trump's administration when it comes to the environment.
But you can bet we'll be looking closely for answers in the coming weeks and months. And we hope you'll stay tuned for that on the Allegheny Front. Thanks for listening to this week's show. I'm Carol Holsapple.
And I'm Reed Frazier. Check out our website, AlleghenyFront.org, for more. Kathy Naur is the executive producer of the Allegheny Front. See you next week.
Support for the Allegheny Front comes from the Heinz Endowments, the Pittsburgh Foundation, the Foundation for Pennsylvania Watersheds, the Laurel Foundation, the Catherine Mabus McKenna Foundation, PNC Charitable Trusts, and the Benedum Foundation. The Richard King Mellon Foundation supports our coverage of energy and conservation.